Hi everyone, and welcome back to Talk Star Wars. I'm Rob.
And I'm Brad.
Hello, mate.
Are you right? You good?
Yeah.
You're not a host this week?
No, I was good this week. I didn't do my usual trick of forgetting that it's not just about me.
But it's a really good idea. Good thing I didn't draw attention to it then.
Yeah, it's really good. I think we got away with it.
We're off to a probably start already. Yeah, I'm really good.
Excellent. Yeah, all right. Yeah, I've just been talking about it off air. We had some issues with the delivery today, which has been a bit of a pain, but otherwise I'm good. So let's jump right into it. It's actually got some news this week about casting.
I know.
Yeah, it's actually stuff. Yeah, it's been a couple of times like that.
We're all aboard the hype train now.
Exactly.
There's only 475 days to go.
Exactly. Thanks to the little counter, you know.
I guess I should have asked this earlier, but it's never really occurred to me. On the show notes,
yes,
obviously people can access from our website. You've got Solo minus 98 days, mm-hmm, and episode 9 is 475 days.
Yes.
Is that time of publication or time of recording?
That is time of recording.
Okay.
So on the show notes, it's the date of the actual that you're viewing the document in.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a how the sausage is made, but whatever. So there's a little spreadsheet behind there doing some work.
Okay.
So that's how it's done. This is one of the clever things I inherited from from the previous administration. speaking of which, actually, I had a lovely occasion the other day. Paul, a long-time contributor to the show, celebrated his 50th birthday the other day.
Oh, wow.
And I got to have... you know, dinner with him and Mark and Steve, like the OG TSW crew. No Jeremy, sadly, but I think it's just because they don't know each other as well as the others.
Mm-hmm.
But happy belated birthday, Paul. Obviously, I saw you on the day, but, you know, nonetheless, many happy returns from...
Happy life day.
Exactly. There you go. Nice life day. So let's jump right into it. So our first email, shock horror, it's from Basuvi.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm pleased to hear that. So, Vesuvio writes, thanks, Rob. Thanks, Brad.
You're welcome, Vesuvi.
Rolling off of one of the write-in comments about midichlorians, perhaps a being's midichlorian level isn't static. Yes, one might be born with a specific baseline concentration in their cells, giving them a starting point of strength or aptitude, but if they train with or abstain from the Force, might that number go up or down relative to their level of skill? I think I may have used the analogy before about midichlorians being like moths to a flame. I kind of like that idea, but it still leaves plenty of room, as it still leaves plenty of room for mystical embellishments. I read, you know, I'm very good at this. Piece by piece, because this is kind of nicely divided into two parts. So let's talk about this first.
It's not something I'd ever really considered, but I have to say I do quite like that idea, because it kind of fits in with the theme of the Force kind of being through all living things and in synchronicity with life.
There's two things about it that I find interesting, this point of view. One, it kind of addresses a problem, not a problem, but a question I've had for a long time about the Star Wars universe, which is when Anakin loses all of his limbs by the end of episode 3, has he lost some of his power? Yeah, because they're blood, you know, they're in your blood. Yeah.
By that logic, if you have a nosebleed, your midichlorian count would go down.
You would think. And obviously, blood tops back up. But if you lose limbs, does that, you know, does that kind of make a bigger difference? Does it take a chunk out?
Did his limbs, which fell into the lava, mean that the planet Mustafar itself became Force sensitive?
I would imagine it's like a...
I'm not throwing out anything out there which isn't weirder than some fan theories we're already seeing.
That's a fair point. I can't really argue with that. So that's the first question. Then the second one that kind of popped into my head as I was actually reading the question just now.
Mm-hmm.
Would that mean that Luke's midichlorian level would drop when he abstains from the Force? And as soon as he comes back in, it's like switching on a power hose.
Mm-hmm.
Goes from, you know, he must go through, it's shooting through the roof, surely.
Yeah.
He's presumably quite strong in it, because although his mother isn't Force sensitive, she's probably got a pretty decent midichlorian count. She probably does okay.
Yeah.
I can't imagine she's, you know, completely inept.
Dullard, is she? No,
exactly.
She's, I mean, we don't know what a midichlorian's glom onto. Is it a personality type? Is it something more chemical? Is it something magical or mystical? You know, there's By virtue of midichlorians being not well received by the majority of fandom at the time they were first introduced, they've never really been explored.
No, which is, you know, it's one of those things, like I say, it raises a lot of questions. Like I say, you know, if Anakin loses his limbs, I would think, obviously, you know, if you're, I'm trying to think about it now, right? So when I give blood, the blood replenishes.
It does.
But that's because I have not lost any limbs in the meantime.
On a good day. You still have bone marrow, so yeah, you're producing
blood. But then presumably, if bone marrow produces blood, if it works in the same way as the Star Wars universe, because obviously this is making suppositions based on real-world biology.
Yeah.
If it's bone marrow that kind of contributes to the production of blood, and you lose some by the fact that you lose some of your bones... Does it slow it down, or does it actually just kind of lower your maximum level?
People do lose limbs in the real world, and they don't always end up anemic as a result. So
no, this is true. But then,
you are losing the ability to produce more blood, but at the same time, you require less.
Yeah, this is what I'm wondering. But then, if midichlorians are part of your bloodstream, does it?
I hope we're getting something ever so slightly wrong here, and there's a biology student who's just having a migraine listening to this.
Well, but you'll be pleased to know, biology student, that from what we understand, the blood will replenish, and it will...
Contrary to popular opinion, we are not doctors.
No, indeed. You know, I've referred to myself as Emperor, Supreme Leader. Doctor is not one of the things I've done, just because it just seems... unnecessary and ludicrous, you know.
Yeah. Fraudulent, that's the word we're looking
That's
for.
The one, yeah.
Malpractice, there we go.
Yeah, malpractice. But is it malpractice if you're not a doctor? Because technically it's a kind of doctor-specific crime, right?
He's waiting for me to drink to do that.
Sorry. So Vesuvi continues. We haven't really addressed that. We've addressed that point, but we've actually raised more questions than we had.
She should know to expect that by now.
Yeah, this is true. So, Vesuvi continues. Later in the show, Rob mentioned his notion that perhaps Snoke trolled Kylo by giving him the impression that he was connecting to Darth Vader in one of his visions. I also share this theory. I can think of no other cogent way Kylo could have gotten the idea that his grandfather had any residual dark side vibes, which remained palpable after death. Another option might be, if it wasn't Snoke actively impersonating Vader, that the melted helmet mask itself retained an echo of Vader's deeds and emotions, rather like psychometry. That could easily be misinterpreted that could easily be misinterpreted by an eager youth as a direct communication when it might have just been an indirect conveyance. The only other thought I've come up with is perhaps Anakin's ghost did show him the power of the darkness, not as a challenge for the boy to surpass Grandad's nefarious accomplishments. That's the greeting card I've always wanted. But as a cautionary message, and Kylo, who had been twisted and groomed by Snoke's influence since he was an embryo, woefully misread the meaning. Those secondary theories, however, don't explain why Anakin's Force spirit hasn't returned subsequently to clarify the misconception. Oh well, we'll know much more in 470-something days. Keep up the excellent work, Vesuvi. Well, thank you for that, Vesuvi. It's very kind of you to say.
There's a lot to unpack there, isn't there?
There is, yeah. Much like a wardrobe that comes in pieces, there's a lot to unpack. So,
yeah, good one.
Yeah. Where do you land on this notion of a kind of why he's taken it the way he has?
Well, breaking it down, the idea of if it wasn't Snoke actively impersonating Vader, the helmet and mask itself retains an echo of Vader's deeds. It was never part of the Legends universe, but since the canon reboot, the idea that physical objects can be imprinted with it's almost like a stone type. They can take on emotions or actions, almost like memories that can be accessed. Which obviously we see in Force Awakens with it was almost like a slow walking when Rey first touches.
Which is Anakin's which is an interesting one actually. It raises a good question. Which I think finish what you were saying. I have a question after.
No, that's not how we roll. Go on, interrupt me.
The memories that Rey sees are psychometry.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that lightsaber on Luke's Jedi Academy, and how did it get from there to Maz Kanata?
Do we know it was at Jedi Academy?
it's psychometry, right? So it's got...
Oh, yeah, it picks up...
It picks up...
Yeah. You
know, memories and emotions. So it should... It must be that's, there.
I hadn't even considered that before, no. But you're absolutely right. Yeah. Okay, so at some point... Because that's... Because in Mesconata, Ray asked how she gets it in Mesconata.
Good just story for another time.
A story for another time. Yeah. I smell the marvel. But that really... That's a big gap that needs plugging in mine.
Now,
because we assumed that's been lost into a gas giant.
Yeah, one interesting way they could have presented it is to have Maz be a sort of Vergia-type figure who's kind of neither playing both sides, neither good nor truly bad.
Yeah, I mean, as you know, until... I'll discuss it with you off-air. Until Last Jedi came out, I was convinced Mesconata was Snoke.
Okay.
That was my theory, which obviously got crashed through like a Calamari cruiser through a Star Destroyer.
You say that, but what we didn't see was Snoke's body being cut in half and then Maz Kanata scurrying away underneath from the... Basically, it's two of Maz Kanata's species in a long coat.
Bang, cannon hammer.
Boom. Judge Cannon.
Yeah.
The cases are stupid. The people are stupid. This is Judge Cannon.
The idea of Vader's helmet. There was a book came out in the run up to Force Awakens. It was like a novella about a bounty hunter picking up Vader's helmet.
Perfect weapon, right?
Thank you. Yeah,
I thought it was the lightsaber that was being picked up because it's been a while since I've read it, admittedly, but I remember the description of the box almost kind of like a long, thin sort of.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. This is the thing. Nobody's ever clarified this because it almost seems. Me and Mark talked about this a while back on TSW. It almost seems like Perfect Weapon has just been kind of surreptitiously ignored and kind of pushed to the wayside. Nothing has really ever. The only thing that's ever come out of it is Bazeen the Tal in Force Awakens as a sort of, you know, third tier character.
Yeah, as a tonic assistant, basically.
Yeah, but essentially, exactly. Yeah.
It was just a short book put out to help plug.
Yeah,
Force Awakens.
But a lot of these books have a bit more impact and a bit more gravitas, and then turn up in some, you know, like Ben's calligraphy set in Bloodline. Is in Last Jedi in the background of his chamber, apparently.
Okay.
Some of these things
do have impact. However, for them to have impact, some can't.
No, true. So, you know, at the very least to varying degrees.
It's a long time since I read Perfect Weapon to the point, as we've established on this episode, I couldn't remember the title of it. But I was under the impression it was Vader's helmet. Maybe we should both revisit it before the next show. So
I'm good with that.
Kind of
it's not that long, is it, as I recall?
Oh, it's about as short as one of my books,
I imagine one of those in a few days.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
Whatever. Easy reads. What can I say?
It takes me to plan them out and plot them anyway. the idea of a mask the idea of Vader's helmet containing some of... could contain some dark side's residue or force echoes, for want of a better term, holds... I'm sure there's precedent for that, not only in Anakin's lightsaber, as we saw, but I'm sure it's turned up in Rebels as well, I want to say.
I think you're right, yeah.
I can't remember exactly what. It's been a while. Mm.
I know I'm trying to think, and I can kind of picture what you're talking about, and that it's one of these sort of... It's not an earlier episode, but it's kind of maybe season two.
Might even been Clone Wars, actually.
Entirely possible as well,
It's a thing. It's a thing. I'm sure it's a thing. Don't ask me to cite my sources. I'm pretty sure.
That's fine. I'm fully with you.
Yeah. The idea of that containing a lot of dark side energy works for me, because Vader's helmet would only ever have been around... working on the assumption Vader only had one helmet.
True.
Would have... is helm better? I don't know. It would have only known Vader. It would never have known Anakin.
No, apart from, like, in those very last moments.
Yeah, that's not going to account for...
No.
You know,
it wouldn't undo 20 years of...
25-odd years
of corridor scenes.
A lot of child murder,
yeah. But you've got to imagine that corridor scenes, that wasn't the first time he'd done that.
Yeah. I'm not sure to work out if he does have multiples, because it gets kind of smashed up at the end of Series 2 of Rebels.
This is true. So maybe he has it rebuilt.
Maybe he's got spares. Yeah. Maybe he's got one on every planet. Who knows? I mean, I'd have spares.
It might be a really common design that he's just owning. You know, like Charlie Chaplin's pencil moustache that just kind of got taken on by other people. Obviously, the most notable of which being Chaplin himself, hopefully. Otherwise, maybe read different books. But Vader might, you know, it might just be a common kind of, or like Michael Myers in the Halloween films, where it's like a William Shatner mask that's just melted a bit. It's actually that Vader mask is actually a particular brand of radiator that's been kind of adapted into sort of a wearable.
Yeah, okay, let's go with it. Why not? They've modified it to make it a bit more trademarkable.
Yeah, exactly. For the copyright purposes, Vader has kind of gone in. And let's be fair, nobody's arguing with Vader when it comes to copyright. It's like, no, you're right. You know what? All those years we thought we were selling it, we were clearly mistaken. It's just you. You're the first.
I mean, that's how basically Kieran Gillen has negotiated anything, so that works for me.
That seems reasonable. I think that's perfectly fine.
But the idea, we've done our little loop-de-loop, we've come back. The idea of a helmet containing a lot of Darksiders energy is why I thought Kylo Ren was interested in it in the first place.
That makes sense.
It was like, not only was it a spiritual connection to his grandfather, but it's a Darkseid item that's been around for a pivotal moment of history around a central figure of the Galactic Civil War.
Yeah.
So that was why I thought he wanted it.
Makes sense. The original notion was that Snoke was trolling Kylo and kind of manifesting himself as Vader, putting on the appearance of Vader, not necessarily physically in some sort of vision, but kind of getting it into his head and manipulating his mind into thinking he was talking to Vader when he was actually talking to Snoke.
I get the impression Kylo Ren has been trying to communicate with the Force Ghost of Anakin or Vader, really.
Yeah.
But with no real success. Have we considered the possibility that light side Force Ghosts can't be seen by dark side users and vice versa?
I've always thought that, I mean, obviously the original draft of Jedi had Obi-Wan and Yoda, you don't want to get them mixed up, Obi-Wan and Yoda turning up as ghosts to help Luke fight Vader and the Emperor, like a sort of, you know, mixed tag. But
yeah.
They removed that and they went instead down the opposite path, which was I cannot intervene and you do this by yourself and so on. My sort of sense was always that because dark side users are kind of more interested in prolonging their own personal existence rather than the bigger picture.
Yes,
they can't create themselves as Force Ghosts after death, and that's the concept of this kind of, you know, I do this for the greater good of the galaxy in the long run, is kind of lost on them, and thus they just can't tap into that sense, that part of their brain that allows them to interact with it.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I've always retconned it in my head, because they've never really explicitly touched on it, but it's always been something that light side users can do, dark side users could do it if they could get out of their own heads at the notion of it's more, you know, the world is more important. It can be more important without them in it.
I think the only dark side ghost we've seen is Bane. Is that right?
Was Bane a ghost? Or was it a vision or holocron? Or
I thought it was a ghost. But again, it's been a while. I'm co-hosting a Star Wars podcast. I'm showing my complete lack of Star Wars knowledge tonight.
To be fair, we can't be expected to watch everything in a week, every week.
You know what? I try.
It'd be lovely. It would be lovely to be able to do that.
But my comics to read pile is about 8 foot high.
And there's more than just Star Wars out there.
It's on iPad. Yep. I do the other Star franchise as well now. Mm. It's not as good, but I quite enjoy it.
Yeah, is that Discovery?
Yeah. Discovery is awesome.
I'm doing another Star. I'm still doing that other Star franchise as well. It's just stars at the end of the first word rather than the beginning. Yeah. So I'm still going through that, you know.
Yeah, you enjoying that?
I am. I'm two episodes from the end of the first series, and it's ramping up at the perfect amount of pace for me. And I'm expecting, I don't really know what to expect in the last two episodes. I have a sense that there's going to be some big event, you know, that's going to kind of set, that's going to dovetail into the second series, but also set up questions. There's a couple of threads that they haven't tied together just yet that I think are going to culminate in the last two episodes, and then series two will kind of continue on.
Mm-hmm.
From there, we'll see. I mean, it may be like Lost, where they sort of start off strong and then at a point it becomes very obvious that they're kind of writing as they go along.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, writer strikes have that side effect, but
do, yeah,
nonetheless, it, you know, sometimes you, some shows yeah. had a better time making it less obvious than others.
The idea of Kylo Ren would confuse almost like a stone type of Vader's force essence in his mask, or with an actual living, breathing, talking force ghost doesn't work for me.
Okay.
I think we've seen almost, I keep saying the stone tape theory, for people who may not know, the idea behind it is, the stone tape theory is the idea that certain types of rock can soak up human emotions.
Okay.
And when you see, you get historical ghosts that are like, whether you believe in them or not, this is the theory that's been postulated. When you see ghosts, like someone sees Anne Boleyn at Hever Castle,
yep.
the idea is it was actually the emotions of a time attracted in the stone, and certain people can access them and replay them.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's, I think that's kind of what we see with Rey and Anakin's lightsaber.
Yeah.
And these ghosts you witness for a stone tape phenomenon, the theory goes, are like seeing a video playback. If you spoke to or tried to interact with them, it would just continue. They would carry on with what they were doing and then yeah. fade from view.
Yeah.
So the idea that someone as clever and as versed in the dark side as Kylo Ren would be able to tell that he wouldn't be able to tell whether he was talking to a playback or a living talking person, I struggle with that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. The other thing that's kind of about it that would, if they went down that route, would kind of not work for me is it's very Potter-esque with the diary and the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
And I just wish people would read other books as well. And, yeah. you know, it's very Chamber of Secrets-y, like the diary that he travels into and he's watching it play back and he can't interact with the people. That stuff to me is, yeah. you know, it's too close to. Obviously, are themes that they might have to re-explore because sometimes, you know, if it's a high level enough theme, it just has to happen that way. And you can't avoid yeah. certain comparisons, but it just seems a bit close to the bone for me for that one.
I'm with you. I don't mind. I mean, obviously, we get stuff like Joseph Conrad's Hero's Journey is kind of gets mixed up with. I really hope it's Joseph Conrad, or I'll just put my foot in my mouth. No,
yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, the idea of the Hero of a Thousand Faces, I think it's called.
Right.
The idea of the hero's journey.
Yeah.
Both Harry Potter and Luke Skywalker go on very similar journeys of discovery and power and mm-hmm. so on. And I think we kind of see a little bit of that with Rey and maybe Finn.
I definitely think that's, you know, there's echoes of the hero's journey. I mean, that's going to be, if it's a big sweeping overarching theme that runs through mm-hmm. a lot of mythology and fiction and stuff. So it's understandable that it would kind of, there would be certain notes that would be played.
I don't mind fiction writers influencing each other because I think to a certain extent that's unavoidable.
Sure.
And I think it's very rarely a bad thing anyway. But yeah, I'm not keen on Harry Potter influencing Star Wars too much because, you know, it all started when they used the same composer.
Yeah.
And I thought a couple of questions, Anakin's Force Ghost did show him the power of the darkness, not as a challenge for a boy to surpass granddad's nefarious accomplishments, but as a cautionary message.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know Anakin's Force Ghost is able to communicate with Kylo.
No, I agree. I think it's, you know, that one to me would be, it would play out almost like a, not a farce, but kind of in a comedic way. It would be like, look at all this stuff I did. And it's sort of, he's watching this montage of slaughtering younglings and killing rebels and things. And he's just like, so what do you think? He's like, awesome. He's like, no, wait, no,
it's
that's
like, it's like the Blackadder Christmas special where it's going, yes, but because they were evil, they
got
all of the money.
Yeah. They're very, very much so, actually. Yeah, that's a good a good analogy for it. I swing with that less. Like I say, I kind of still, I like the psychometry angle, but the first one is still kind of the idea that he's basically just catfishing him.
Yeah, I don't think Anakin Skywalker can communicate with Kylo Ren.
No.
By very virtue of the fact, I believe, if he could have, he would have already.
Yes, yeah, agreed.
And so there's some reason he can't.
It's a shame, really, isn't it, that when they've kind of seen him, if they've had him conflicted on screen, Kylo, they haven't had this kind of almost like a radio static tuning in sort of ghost that kind of, you know, he's at the edge, and you can sort of see it. You can sort of starts taking form, but then he disappears, and it would work as a visual kind of, what's the word? It would work very well on a visual level to kind of show the conflict and the turmoil that he's going through internally. To see something, he's kind of on the cusp of seeing, realizing his dream of seeing, kind of communicating with Darth Vader, but it's actually not for the reasons he thinks. It's because he's on the kind of verge of, he's sort of torn between light and dark.
Yeah.
And he thinks it's because he's getting more powerful than the dark side. Actually, it's the opposite. It's because he's still kind of conflicted, and it's actually the light side of the equation trying to kind of balance itself out. I would kind of like that as a visual thing. I think they're too far gone in episode 9 to play that out, which is, I think it's probably for the best, because I think going on a redemption arc now would be tricky and kind of daft.
But as Rasivi says, we'll find out in 470 days.
This is true, you know. So there
we go. There's a lot of comics and video games and tabletop games and all sorts of stuff to enjoy before we get there.
Big time. So do you want to read the next one from Jawa number one?
Sure. From Jawa number one. Hello there.
Nice.
Everyone seems to be accepting that Aurra Sing was killed by Beckett, but was this really the case? He says he pushed her to her death, but we don't know if her body was found and her death confirmed. Remember that Darth Maul was cut in half and fell to his death, supposedly. Do you think Aurra Sing may yet appear in stories after Solo, a Star Wars story?
I would say potentially, if Beckett had survived, because I think I would have made in a comic or something. That would have made for a good set piece. Like in Dark Empire, when Han Solo sees Boba Fett for the first time since Jabba's sail barge. A moment like that with Beckett and Aurra Sing, where he's like, I thought, you know, I pushed you to your death. And it's like, well, not obviously you didn't do it well enough, or something along those lines. But I think now that Beckett's dead, I would see it as unlikely, because there's not really any payoff from that, apart from fans, apart from, you know, really intricate fan service is probably the word for it.
I mean, because she's a weird character anyway, because she's blink and you'll miss her in Phantom Menace. She's not on. I would be surprised if she was on screen for 3 seconds.
Yeah, that's probably true.
It's a reaction shot almost. She gets up and walks away, I think.
Yeah.
She's in a few episodes of Clone Wars. Again, some of that is background, not saying anything. She was a very minuscule minor character, you know. Poggle the Lesser and Wat Tomba are more significant characters than Aurra Sing is.
That's true, because he has dialogue.
Yeah, and I kind of find it hard to care, to be honest with you.
No, that's fair. Paul
was a significant character that a lot of people loved in Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And it was always kind of, what if he survived? And at the time we got, oh, that's ridiculous. And Star Wars writers heard it and thought, you're right.
Challenge accepted.
Ridiculous is what we do.
Yeah.
Do I think that Aurra Sing may yet appear in stories after a Solo story? Non-chronologically, I think she may well turn up in some of these new episodes of Clone Wars. I think she may turn up in Boba Fett comics or Dengar novellas or Bosk the animated series. But I would be surprised if she turned up chronologically after Solo, a Star Wars story, because her death is meant to make Beckett sound a little bit harder.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, I would say the vast majority of people who saw Solo, who, sorry Vasuvi, wasn't that big a number in the first place, most of those wouldn't have known who Aurra Sing was, and it was just a miscellaneous bounty hunter to them.
Yeah.
Aurra Sing is an incredibly insignificant character. Maybe there's stories and stuff you can do with her, but by this point, I'd rather see someone new instead. If you need a bounty hunter for a story, make someone new. Don't dig up Aurra Sing for the sake of it.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I think it's, I say the one for me would be if Beckett had somehow kind of survived. Let's say, for argument's sake, he takes Kira's place at the end of the film, swaps around. That would be a good payoff. Because then it sort of undermines a bad character, a villain character.
Yeah, I would then worry with Darth Maul coming back, and there's constant I've yet to find anything concrete, but there are several parties who are convinced that it's canon that Boba Fett escaped the Sarlacc.
I think it is considered to be now.
Yeah, I think it was like George Lucas announced it, but there's been no media portraying it.
Yeah,
but then if Aura Singh was supposedly shoved to her death and turns back up again, and no one is, and if especially if they then go down the Mace Windu route as well, no one is ever going to believe a fall in Star Wars ever again.
No,
that's
true.
Why there's no railings anywhere. There's no risk of death from falling anywhere in Star Wars ever.
Except for Obi-Wan having to fake his own death multiple times.
Yeah.
They're like, that Obi-Wan guy, he's died multiple times. It's like, man.
Should probably put a railing in. What's a railing?
Yeah. Well, I've no idea.
I
think it's one of those ones that...
Just put a trampoline at the bottom of the Reichenbach Falls these days? Is that what's going on?
I think it's one of those ones... Say, there were ways they could have done it that would have had a payoff, but I think it's just... It's the most intricate of fan service to do something like that at this point because I'd kind of agree with you to a point, but I think that actually the people who went to see Solo probably are the people who'd recognize Aura Singh's name, but that's not a large swathe of the movie going public.
No.
Yeah, no, quite, you know, and I think I think those are the fans who probably would know the name, but at the same time,
yeah,
of those, how many people were like, "Oh, they killed her off."
Yeah. Oh,
I think most people were just elated that she was mentioned at all.
Yeah, but I was like, that's a nice little thing.
I
was like, yes, God, I love Bosk. And so he got shouted at as well. Yeah. Is he here? I got a little bit excited.
He's a fanboy of Trandoshans.
He's not my favourite, but I do love him.
Mad on Trandoshans. Little known fact.
Yeah. I love RG88. He's my favourite bounty hunter. Get the impression he might be hard to do live action.
Maybe. He could go down the K2 SO route.
Maybe, but he's pretty static when you see him in Empire.
True.
He's turned up in Force of Destiny a couple of times.
Yeah. I suppose it's easier on the cartoon level.
I do wonder if they tried doing live action, is there anything they could do I'd be happy with?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? You know, it's one of those things. Sometimes you think you want something and you don't. You don't. Yeah. You think you do, but then you get it and you're like, not like this. Yeah. But thank you, Jawa number one, for writing that one in, because actually, there's, you know, I thought about that. I gave that more thought than I thought I would, if that makes sense.
Totally.
I thought it was a very. I kind of took it as in the initial. Thing as a kind of side question,
don't
but
take our complete lack of caring about Aura Singh as reason not to write in again, please do.
Oh no, but write in any, you know, the more seemingly bizarre the question, to be honest.
Yeah, totally.
There's all sorts of fun to be had there.
Yeah.
So our next email is coming from Diecast Desperado.
It's your turn.
Yeah. Greetings, gents. I just wanted to address the comment made by Richard E. Grant about the character he won't be playing in episode 9. Firstly, the question was asked in what I view to be an incorrect way. I agree, for the record.
Have you got the actual wording of the question?
I mentioned it last week. It's, and how are you preparing for the role of Grand Admiral Thrawn in episode 9?
Okay, cool.
So, from a certain point of view, Grand Admiral Thrawn was only a Legends character. In his canon appearances, I believe Thrawn is simply known as Admiral Thrawn. Furthermore, by the time of episode 9, he will likely not even be called an Admiral. I already know how you view Thrawn appearing in episode 9, but I'm still thinking we may see him there. As to what you can call me, I quite like Desperado. So may the Force be with you, Desperado. So I've had a little bit of a change of heart on this, a tiny bit. So I have to caveat by saying it's a small change of heart. But you
before,
you
go, yeah. Just goes on, I was asking just to make sure I'm understanding.
Yes.
Desperado. So the interviewer in the Radio Times asked how you preparing for Grand Admiral Thrawn in episode 9.
Correct.
And he said, I'm not playing that character.
I'm not playing the character you just mentioned.
Okay, Desperado thinks it's because they said Grand Admiral Thrawn, not Admiral Thrawn or Thrawn.
He's saying it could be like a, you know, a
from a certain point of view.
Yeah, a kind of, it's a tenuous one, but it would be much like when J.J. Abrams said Benedict Cumberbatch wouldn't be playing Khan in Into Darkness, and he ended up going on to play Khan.
Just just when you think Star Wars fans can't split hairs any finer, we're now conceiving that Richard E. Grant is trolling us over an adjective.
It's been known. You know, there's form here for trolling us, especially with JJ films. Like I say, Into Darkness, when he said that Benedict Cumberbatch wouldn't be playing Khan. And what happens? He plays Khan.
And I haven't seen it. Oh, okay.
Sorry. Sorry, spoilers. You've had years.
That's fine.
You've had years.
No, I haven't. I'm not complaining.
So I've had, like I say, I've had a small change of heart with regards to the Thrawn in Episode 9 thing. So, on the one hand, I think it is plausible that Thrawn could play a small part in Episode 9.
Right.
Two things on that. I don't think Richard E. Grant will be playing him. And I don't think he's going to be a primary character. I think he's going to be a side character. And I think he will be in a background of a shot or something along those lines.
Do you know what he should do? He should, Aura Singh should come back up and Thrawn can just shove her over again.
And then Obi-Wan can just explode in the background. To the Benny Hill soundtrack.
There are people who would rather have our movies than Last Jedi. Don't forget that.
That's true. That's true. You know. It's like I could believe the presence of Thrawn in Episode 9 in some small form. I don't think
in
it's
a small capacity.
Yeah,
yes.
I don't think it would be Richard E. Grant, and I don't think he's going to be a large amount of screen time. I think he could be a passing reference or a small, you know, like a blink and you'll miss it kind of cameo in the backdrop somewhere. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. I also feel like if he was in the First Order, we'd have seen him in Episode 7 at the big point where you see everyone.
Yes, I don't know. The alliance between the Empire, as we established in the Thrawn Alliances book we reviewed a couple of episodes ago, the alliance between the Chiss Ascendancy and the Galactic Empire has always been kind of, I keep trying to say coercive, but that's not the word
It's fractious. It's very much it's a marriage of convenience.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and the idea that they would necessarily then jump straight in bed with the First Order after one of her allies suffers a massive defeat. It's a leap of logic to me to assume that the Chiss Ascendancy and Thrawn in particular would side with this particular Imperial remnant, which became the First Order.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible, but it's a hell of a leap of logic to make, in my opinion.
I would agree. I think it's...
Clandestine. Clandestine was the word
there
I was looking for.
All right.
Right. It's not coercive. Clandestine. Professional writer.
No, that's fine. Professional writers are not expected to know every single word. It's okay.
I try.
In the same way as, like, I wouldn't expect a chef to be able to recall every recipe possible from scratch.
Do I not?
No. No. Oh. They usually have a specialty, if nothing else.
Okay, well, that's not too bad.
Yes, yeah, so, you know, everybody's got
the
niche.
I get what you're suggesting, but I kind of stand by the point I made last week in that I feel bringing Thrawn in Episode 9 would either confuse people who didn't know him or disappoint those who did.
I'm inclined to agree. I'm just kind of... Mm-hmm. All I'm doing with this point is kind of illustrating that I'm not a complete hardliner on he's not going to be in there in any format. I just think he's not going to take up prominent screen time.
Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to burst into tears in the cinema if he does turn up.
No,
think it would be a very odd gamble to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah, as I keep saying, part 9 of a 9-part series, we don't need... Oh, cool, Thrawn's here.
Oh, cool, and 90% of the movie-going audience, if you want the kind of numbers that Star Wars movies usually make in terms of box office revenue, 90% of the audience shouldn't go, who the hell is that?
Yeah.
Because that's what will happen.
Yeah.
So Desperado, as we will now henceforth be referring to you, thank you for your message.
Yeah.
Our next one comes from Stephen at Roku Depot. So did you want to take that one?
Okay. Yeah, sure. Stephen, is it pronounced Roku?
I think so. We've never been corrected.
If we're wrong, please correct us phonetically.
Yeah, by all means.
Hey, guys. Hey, Stephen. I've got a question concerning Star Wars Resistance. Sure, it's a kids' show, just like Star Wars The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels, but both those shows got heavy at times. Main characters died in both of those shows, and war and loss were big themes. Do you think we'll see that crop up in Star Wars Resistance, or do you think the show will be more light-hearted than previous shows? With the main character in this show investigating the First Order, it could potentially go down a very dark path, as the First Order has shown itself to be very violent in the films. Best regards, Stephen Rokudipu.
So, I have this sense that no, it's not going to be as dark. And the reason I say that is because I don't get the sense that this is a long show that's going to run for seasons and seasons and seasons.
Okay.
Clone Wars and Rebels have that kind of time, you know, a long period of time for you to get attached to these main cast of characters. Mm. I think Resistance, in comparison, is going to be much shorter. And as a result, they won't kind of... I have a lot of faith in Dave Filoni to do cool stuff when it comes to storytelling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I feel like he's smart enough to know that pulling the trigger too quick on a character death when you've got no reason to be invested in them is not the way to do it.
Are you listening, Lucas?
So I feel like we don't necessarily know how much legs this show has got, but the fact that it's set, I think, is it 6 months before the events of The Force Awakens?
Yeah.
If you're going to put that over four seasons, you've got a breakneck pace you've got to tell stories at.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think by that kind of virtue, it's going to be one, maybe two seasons. I think something that gets overlooked is the reason Clone Wars and Rebels grew progressively darker is because partly it was an artistic decision, partly it was a storytelling device, but I think it was also partially marketing founded in that they didn't just run the cartoon for a few years and have some audience members grow out of it and other new ones grow into that age range. They aged the show alongside the age of the audience.
Yes,
so someone who was 8 years old when they started watching Clone Wars was 12, 13, maybe 14 when it finished.
Yeah,
and were ready for character deaths and considerably darker themes.
Yeah.
And it was a very canny move.
Yes, absolutely. It's why. So I think it's probably worse.
Episodes are there for younger audiences to grow into and watch as they go along. And Rebels is very much the same. I mean, my daughter's 1.5. She's got Force of Destiny, which is a great young kids show. She really enjoys that. And we've kind of let her watch the pilot of Rebels and a few of the first episodes. But me and my wife are very much in agreement. She's not ready for season two onwards until she's older.
Yeah.
And there's nothing to say she won't get there eventually, of course. But,
of course, yeah. Well, your copies of your DVDs and stuff don't catch fire, so there's always
going to be that. Exactly, yeah. And yeah, when she's, you know, I'm 35 and I'm quite enjoying watching Force of Destiny. So
well, there you go. Exactly.
And IG-88's in it.
It. Well, quite, you know.
Yeah. Not Aura Singh, though, just saying.
anyway, you were saying?
Yes, I think you are right. I think Resistance is being both artistically and commercially conceived as a shorter project, especially with the knowledge there's new Clone Wars coming.
There is that too. I mean, Clone Wars is very much, they know there's a finite duration to that. Is it 12 episodes? Yeah.
So I think the last series is underweight, isn't it? So it might be. I think it's the episodes that are storyboarded, but because they stopped airing about a third of the way in, the third, which had kind of been finished but not aired, was released on DVD as The Lost Missions.
That's the one, yep.
And the ones that were storyboarded, you could just watch as like storyboards with voiceover on YouTube.
Yeah.
And I think those ones are ones that are being turned into the full episodes.
That's my understanding, yeah.
That's my understanding.
Because they mentioned at Celebration or Comic-Con, where whichever one it was, it must have been Comic-Con, right? Where it was announced, they talked about the Siege of Mandalore, which was one of the episodes that never got aired, which everybody was really desperate for.
Yeah,
Which it does sound awesome, to be fair, just from the name.
So it does.
Just from the concept, sounds excellent.
Yeah, and like we were saying about the Chiss Ascendancy Alpha Empire, I am really curious as to what happens to Mandalore because it's such an interesting culture and such an interesting planet. Yeah.
Well, if you believe the rumors, that's what the Favreau series is going to focus on after Jedi.
I'm kind of down with that.
Yeah.
I heard a fan theory recently. I don't know if it's been officially confirmed. Apparently, Ilum was turned into Starkiller Base.
I've heard that before as well. I don't recall ever seeing that confirmed anywhere, but I've heard that theory too.
I'll check Wikipedia, see if there's.
Sounds like a plan.
Precedence there's precedence or precedence
for that. So to kind of summarise my take on it, I think that this show is max two seasons. I think any more than that, and you start to get breakneck, and you have to tell some really quick stories.
I could see two series, and at absolute most two series, and maybe a short film release on DVD, like they did for Rebels.
Okay, yeah, I could see. Yeah, okay, yeah, like a feature length, like a not a feature length, but a sort of double, triple length episode.
Maybe like one that ties in the end of a series to the start of Force Awakens.
That would be a good shout. That would tie in nicely with the way they've done it for Rebels as well, because every feature length one dovetails into the beginning of the next series.
So that makes
a lot of sense. But Stephen, thank you for writing that one in. I'd love to know your thoughts because, you know, a lot of the time we get these questions in from people, and this goes for all the questions we're going to read today.
Yeah.
Obviously, if
it's a two-way thing here.
Yeah, if people proffer their opinions in the email, that's one thing. But if they just ask us what we think, that's great. But we also want to know what you think. So if you have if you have thoughts on these things, then by all means, email us at podcast@talkstarwars.co.uk is the place to do it. Anyway, our next email comes from Derek.
Yay!
Derek writes, "Hello again.
Hello again.
You two seem to be hitting your stride. TSW continues to be invaluable and enjoyable listening."
Steve Hogarth, TSW.
Earlier this year, following your recommendation, my wife and I binged Rebels. Loved it. Now we're watching The Clone Wars. That is a good choice. During episode 19 of season 1, Storm Over Ryloth, we see the Anakin maneuver. Here's the relevant dialogue. So Anakin to Ahsoka says, I decided the only way we can break the blockade... I decided the only way we can break the blockade is if I pilot the Defender right into their battleship. The enemy can't stop that ship from taking them out. Later, he drops out of hyperspace, and after distracting them long enough to get close enough, tells R2, boost the engines and let's get out of here. The ship rams the Separatist battleship at normal speed. I couldn't help but compare it to the Holdo maneuver. Here's the setup for that.
Oh, is that what we're calling it?
The Holdo maneuver, yeah, it's been called that since... since Bang on Last Jedi, I think. It's the first time it's ever been done, so, you know. There you go. Officer says, sir, the Resistance cruiser's preparing to jump to light speed. Hux replies, it's empty. They're just trying to pull our attention away. Pathetic. Keep your fire on the transports. A few minutes later, Hux, once he realizes that Holdo's pointed at his ship and realizes what's about to happen, fire on that cruiser. So he has two comments on this and then a follow-up question.
Sure.
So the first comment. I feel even more confident that Rian Johnson didn't break the universe because Anakin used the exact same strategy while George Lucas was the executive producer for Clone Wars.
Okay.
Also, second comment, due to the fact Hux was notified about what Holdo was preparing to do, I'm more confident he had defensive maneuvers available to him that would prevent any ship from being used as a light-speed bullet, but was too arrogant in the moment.
Okay.
And then the follow-up question, did you want to do the comments first?
He's broken a paragraph. I confess that I did remember episode.
I tried to get back and watch it again in time for the show. I just didn't have a chance, unfortunately.
Do you want to break and watch it now?
No, it's fine. And, you know, normally I'd say yes, but, you know, let's not do that. We're on a good run, so I like to keep the flow.
Yeah.
There is a difference. There's a distinction to me between a ship in normal speed ramming another ship and a ship being able to split an entire fleet in two, going into light speed and cracking multiple ships in two.
I mean, the mass shadow gravity well of that First Order Star Destroyer should have prevented any ships from going to hyperspace anyway.
One would think, yeah.
If you're going to take a deep pull from canon, like a random episode of The Clone Wars, then acknowledge some other elements of canon as well.
Yeah, yeah. But, there's precedent for it in Rogue One as well, because obviously when the Rebel fleet is trying to jump to light speed, the Star Destroyer jumps in. Mm-hmm. And the Rebel ships start bouncing off it and crashing. But there's a couple of things about that. So the Rebel ships haven't jumped yet. Mm-hmm. And they're just ramming into a much, much bigger ship. And they're ramming into it kind of almost like side on. So they're only Nebulon B frigates anyway. They're not particularly... They don't look particularly sturdy in the neck of the ship. They're, you know, they're very much kind of... They're like pistols, ultimately. You know, the kind of long, thin barrel and then like a chunk of ship at the back and a chunk of ship at the front.
Yeah,
I can't imagine that that's going to take a Star Destroyer bouncing in on it.
Yeah, you know, I honestly think the Holdo maneuver, as I now know it is called, will...
It's an unofficial title, I think, but it's stuck.
I think it will be the midichlorians of the sequel trilogy. And bear with me, I think the reason for that is everyone will accept it happened, but we'll never see or hear from it ever again because the vast majority of fandom hates it.
Mm. There is a certainly a portion of fandom that's not on board with it. I'm certainly one of them. I make no bones about it, and this is one of the reasons me and Derek have been back and forth on this for months. It's because I just can't reconcile it as anything other than looks lovely, but for me it just doesn't make sense. You know,
no, I'm totally on board with that. It's like they wouldn't have had. There's not one interdict to Star Destroyer in that entire flotilla. You know,
yeah. Yeah.
If I could, and more to the point, bear in mind, I've only seen The Last Jedi once. If that ship could jump to hyperspeed and smash through a Star Destroyer, why couldn't the rest of them? Is it because they were worried about being chased?
Well, yeah, that's the thing is,
they're working on tracking through hyperspace, aren't they?
Yes, and in Last Jedi, they have the Supremacy, I think it's called. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah, the Supremacy. Snoke's flagship ship. They have a hyperspace tracking. And that's what Rose and Finn sneak on there to disable.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Sorry to his massive fans last year, I've seen it loads of times.
No, that's fine.
I've only managed to catch it once so far.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Everybody's different, you know. It's that bit I don't have so much of a problem with. There is one thing that does kind of confuse me about it. Do they mean to tell me that they catch a resistance plot to sabotage the hyperspace tracker? They shut it down, and what, they just leave it down? I suppose, having said that, maybe actually I'm talking poo-doo there, because it's not relevant to the ability to go to hyperspace. It's about the utility of it rather than the ability to. So yeah, actually forget what I just said there, because that doesn't make sense.
It really has.
Yeah, that's fine. And to be fair, by tomorrow I will have as well. That's part of my... I've got like an etch-a-sketch memory.
Monday's always a pleasant surprise for me.
I've got an etch-a-sketch memory.
That's how arrogant I was on Thursday.
I feel like Hux... I think Derek... I'll give Derek... You know, I'm kind of with Derek on the sense that Hux probably did realise what was about to happen.
Too late.
Yeah, I do think he's right there.
I'm on board with that.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly...
If he had countermeasures... Yeah, it's a bit, it kind of echoes evacuating our moment of triumph.
Yeah, there's a bit of that to it. It still should have been Ackbar. That's my take on it.
Yes, totally. And this isn't a knock on Laura Dern, who's
Laura Dern, a wonderful actress. And she seems lovely as well.
Storyline-wise, you know, it's like, you know, I love Lawrence Fishburne, but in Predators it should have been Danny Glover. Yeah, it would have made so much more sense. I mean, so you want to talk about fan satisfaction, like dropping in names like Aurora Singh, giving Ackbar a glorious death would have been amazing.
Yeah, totally. It's one of, you know, it's obviously memes have a big part of that, because one of the reasons he's so popular is because he's very meme-worthy. Mm-hmm. Obviously, things like Robot Chicken have definitely kind of played on that forever. But for me, there's a distinction between a ship ramming another ship at sub-light speed.
Yes.
Versus a ship cracking another ship in two. And like I say, I'm pretty sure it's the entire flotilla. It's not just one ship.
Going on memory, I thought it went through
I remember seeing a shot of multiple ships with a crack through them. It just doesn't...
Yeah.
I don't understand. They never quite explain how that works. And for me, that's something...
It's not all of a flotilla, but it does slow them down significantly.
Yeah. But it for me, like I say, that for me is a shot that looks wonderful, because it really does. It's a visually stunning. Yeah. The non-sound, you know, the complete silence during it is a really cool artistic choice. It doesn't work for me in the film.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense for me in the film.
The Last Jedi is, I would say, if not the most attractive, The Last Jedi is the most visually striking.
It's very much. If it's not the top, it's up there in the top echelon, because it's visually stunning.
It's wonderful. Yeah, absolutely.
There's so many great set pieces and so much wonderful kind of color palette stuff they're doing, stark reds and whites and things, and that's a theme throughout the marketing, and it plays through in the film as well, and it's really quite impressive.
Yeah.
My issue is purely that, like I say, for me, I just can't reconcile it. Try as I might, because there is a certain, I think, and I think certainly, this varies among fandom, but there is a certain desire to make things make sense for yourself if it's a property you invest yourself in emotionally.
Yeah, well, this
there's
is
a
where
certain
we
desire to make it work.
Expand the universe, which we need a better term than just Star Wars canon, because
yeah, it does sound like a super weapon, a particularly ill thought out one in another comic.
Yeah, but we always have a Star Wars movies and we have a Star Wars expanded universe.
Yeah.
And we cut set to the two tiers. And now there's not. There is now one continuity tier. Mm-hmm. It still feels a bit strange having to say the books and the comics and the games and so forth. We need a kind of a catch-all term because I can't say expanded universe anymore. Something else to people.
I've always referred to them as the connected materials.
Oh, that's good.
Even
like that.
That's kind of a weird phrase.
Yeah, it sounds a bit like a singer-songwriter who's kind of, who used to be quite successful and has had to replace his backing band.
The connected materials.
It's no longer Steve Harley and the Cockney Rebel, but if you go down Butlin, Steve Harley and the Connected Materials are playing.
Yeah, very true. Yeah. Playing their fantastic songs like Mr. Not Hard. Put a smile on my face. Yeah.
Tom Petty and the Connected Materials are doing the festival this year.
Yeah, yeah.
And all got part, because they don't get on.
Yeah, we've tried and it's just not happening. So that's kind of my take on it. So I say, Derek, I realise we are destined to do this forever. But
we can just stop reading your emails out and we win that way.
No, there's no winning or losing.
We need people screaming at us, or there's no choice.
It's art, man. You know, it's all subjective. Yeah. And
he had a question as well, didn't he?
He did, yes. So the follow-up question to this is there a meaningful or relevant difference between hyperspace and light speed? So keep up the good work, Derek in Denver, Colorado. Thank you, Derek. And say, we do love to hear from you. I say, I realize we don't always agree. Yeah, we don't always agree, but this is okay. But Derek's always been like, he's not one of those people who's just going to yell at you and tell you off and things like that.
No, I enjoyed hearing from him. Digging up that Clone Wars episode, I'm going to have to go into that as well.
And he's
it's like you said earlier, we can't have Wikipedia encyclopedic knowledge of everything. So, you know, you guys help us with the show as much as we can.
Absolutely. So, on the answer to this question, I know you've gone and had a look. I didn't have a chance.
I knew most of it anyway. I went through Wikipedia on the chance that it had been something changed since the canon.
That's fine.
Reboot.
So I'm going to kind of give you my sense of it, and you can feel free to kind of give me the correct answer.
I'll do my bit.
I've always understood light speed as the velocity at which you travel, which is to say the speed of light.
Yes.
And then hyperspace is a type of space you exist in while you're traveling at light speed.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah. It is, yes. Okay. Light speed is the speed of light as we understand it in our universe. It's the distance light particles travel in a year, and it's an incredible distance, obviously.
Yes.
A lot of what I'm about to say is not proper science. Please do not try and pass any sort of
qualification.
It is wizards in space. If you're a Marvel fan, it's PIM particles or unstable molecules. It's
timey-wimey stuff in Doctor Who.
It's very much bound for new sci-fi.
Yeah.
The idea is that hyperspace is like an alternate dimension or a pocket dimension, which exists parallel to our own universe, Star Wars universe. With a hyperdrive, which will enable your vessel to travel at light speed, the idea is you can punch through into hyperspace, which is almost like a series of, it's a bit like an ant colony, I suppose. There's all these tunnels connecting various points, and we see a little bit of it in Solo as well.
Yes, we do. This is true. Around near Castle.
Yes, for those kind of tunnel systems. Oh God, I just remember that shot of that Star Destroyer.
Hyperspace lanes. That shot of that Star Destroyer,
that is now my favorite shot.
It's so good. There's so much good stuff in that film. There's so much wonderful
shot
stuff.
As a box canvas, I love it.
And you know what? One of the things that just annoyed me about this week was that it was outperformed at the box office by The Meg. Now I'm an agnostic, but every so often something happens that makes me think. Do you know? I'm swung. Fences are usually very comfy,
I think the major difference there is that Meg was marketed successfully.
I think that's a big thing of it. You know,
come at me, the Suvi.
Well, I think you're right. I think the Meg is it's marketed correctly in the sense that it's exactly, nobody goes in expecting something different to what they get.
Mm-hmm. And people are aware it's coming out, which is
that's also a big thing. Yeah, and also I imagine if there were toys, they probably came out in time. Just
I'd imagine mirrors.
They did, and they didn't just repackage, you know, Jaws stuff and just put the Meg box art on it like they did with the Solo artwork and the Last Jedi figures. Still, pegs everywhere.
So hyperspace is like this pocket dimension that will let you get where you needed to be significantly faster than you would do through conventional impulse power. As you say, light speed is the speed that's required to punch through into this pocket dimension. There are all sorts of other sub-hyperspace, which is what Starkiller Base fires its weapon through. Basically, that's how hyperspace works. Is using a hyperdrive, you would punch through into this almost like warren of tunnels and pathways that you could plot a course to of where you need to go, and then you punch back through at the other end. You can, it's what's called pseudo motion, which I think was originally an out of canon term, but has become now, is when you see a ship in the Star Wars and just go to hyperspace, it almost flickers for a moment and then just shoots off much faster than you can make it out. And the way they bring them out of hyperspace in the Star Wars movies, I still think looks incredible, is it's you're seeing it from a static camera and then the ships just come to a dead stop directly in front of you. And it always looks amazing, but that's what they're doing. They're coming out of hyperspace. They're traveling, you know, you think about our entire vision system is based on light. And it's traveling faster than light. You won't see it until it's on you. And the way they convert that in a film, I still think is brilliant.
It's probably one of the most underappreciated and kind of subtle pieces of visual storytelling in Star Wars.
It's also very much a hallmark of Star Wars, because the ships in Star Trek travel at warp factor, and they don't use that effect or that camera. It's very much become, we can't do that style. That's how they do it in Star Wars.
Yeah, maybe.
Coming back to the original question, so you are correct in light speed. You travel at light speed to reach hyperspace. Yeah.
Okay.
I will caveat this by saying, as I said, this is not proper sci-fi.
No.
But the best way of thinking of it is it's a magic door that the wizards in space can travel through to get to where they need to go.
If you've seen the documentary Event Horizon, it's very much that premise, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's that warp drive that takes you from one point in space to another point in space instantaneously. Obviously, Star Wars has better results.
Of the off chance anyone listening to this is a Wheel of Time fan as well, the ways are like magical gateways, which you can certain people can open up and they can travel through these dark tunnels, which always in my head look a bit like the nightmare scenes from Max Payne, and they can then come miles and miles and miles away from where they went in. So if you're a Wheel of Time fan, hyperspace is kind of like the ways as well.
Hitchhiker's Guide got something a bit like that as well towards the end with Slightly Belfast.
It's a while since I've read that, isn't it? Infinite Improbability Drive.
I'm talking once he's on, I can't remember the name of the planet. It's the last planet that Arthur Dent visits. This may be in the remake of the film.
Is this the Martin Freeman movie?
Maybe.
I haven't seen that version.
Okay, so there's a planet they land on, which has, I think it has that kind of doorway kind of system where it sort of takes you around into Magrathea. Yes, because I just remember, now you say that, I can remember Sam Rockwell just yelling it over and over and over again, because he's Zaphod Beeblebrox in that film.
And the casting is so good.
Oh, it's so well done.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say about it is, as much as I like Bill Nye, it very much is Bill Nye just being Bill Nye. It doesn't sort of, you know, he kind of doesn't really, I don't feel like he gets a chance to really put his mark on it, other than him literally just playing himself, which is, it was at a period where he was in a lot of movies like that.
Wow. He also has a twitch. Yeah. It's kind of his whole, he's got a strange facial tick in most of his characters.
Okay, so there we go. So light speed is the speed, and hyperspace is the state you reach once you hit it.
Within a colloquial sense, if a Star Wars character said, we're going to light speed or we're going to hyperspace, you could take that as very much meaning the same thing.
Yeah, one is the transport method, one is the destination.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to get a scene, we're not going to get a scene with Han now anyway, but, you know, we wouldn't get a scene with Han says, prepare for the jump to light speed, and Luke's not going to pop his head around the door and say, actually, I think you mean prepare for the jump to hyperspace. Light speed is a speed required to reach hyperspace.
Yeah, exactly.
I think maybe in A New Hope that scene would have worked, actually. No, no better character.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the answer. Is hyperspace is a magic door.
Yes, and light speed is the key to get to it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Nice.
Which is, although X-Wings and most of Rebellion craft have hyperdrives, TIE fighters don't.
That's true. Yes, yeah. This is true. There's only certain ones that are kitted out with hyperdrives, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's usually to make them more maneuverable, I guess.
I believe it's a weight factor, yes. Yeah,
that probably factors in, I would guess.
Possibly fuel consumption, actually.
Yeah, also possible, yeah.
Yeah, I know Vader's TIE Advanced X-1 has a hyperdrive.
That makes sense.
I don't know about TIE Interceptors, actually. That can be something else I'll look up in the break.
Okay, fair enough. So, speaking of a break, it's time for one. So we're going to do that, and then when we come back...
Already?
A little bit of Star Wars.
Yeah, all right, bye. What was it? I was looking up. I was looking up TIE Interceptors and something else.
Yeah, so when we come back from the break, a bit of Star Wars news.
All right.
And we're back. So you had some research, Brad, in the break.
I did. I feel like we're cutting over to Dictionary Corner now.
That's all right.
Rachel Riley can't quite do it in time. We have to cut back to her later in the episode. That's how it feels. Yeah. I'm very the Rachel Riley of Talk Star Wars, everyone.
Oh, well, you know, I think that's all right. She seems pretty integral.
To look up who that is and enjoy it.
Well, you'll be pleased you did.
Oh, you will, yes. So I had to do a little bit of research because we both heard this rumour that Starkiller Base was actually built on the grounds of Ilum, which is where most of the lightsaber crystals were found. According to Wikipedia, this is not true. The last time we see Ilum is just after the Galactic Empire's come to power, and as far as we know, it's just barricaded by two Imperial class Star Destroyers.
Fair enough.
The planet which is converted into Starkiller Base does have some similarities with Ilum, which might explain the confusion.
Okay.
It is a remote ice planet which was converted. Mm-hmm. And also there were a lot of kyber crystals in this ice planet which were mined to build
the
first Death Star. Yeah. Laser for the Death Star, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so I think that's where the confusion has arisen. But as of now, Ilum is still, as far as we know, Ilum is still a surviving planet, albeit possibly subjugated by either the Galactic Empire or the First Order.
Fair enough. And the second piece was TIE Interceptors.
TIE Interceptors do not have a hyperdrive. As far as I could establish, the only sign of fleet systems TIE class starships which do have a hyperdrive is Darth Vader's TIE Advanced X-1 and the two-seater Special Forces TIE SF used by the First Order, the only ones with hyperdrives. And I have to correct myself as well, because as far as I can establish, Y-Wings do not have hyperdrives.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Which is interesting.
Bear in mind, I did that 5 minutes. So I just couldn't find it.
Interceptors... I can believe because they're designed for speed and maneuverability. And if TIE fighters are considered to be too heavy to have a hyperdrive.
Weight or fuel consumption is a concern, both, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, weight would probably have some effect.
I like TIE interceptors.
They're pretty nifty. And when I did play X-Wing more regularly, they were my ships of choice. If I had an Imperial run, I'd build them around that.
Yeah, my favourite force to use with X-Wing is 9 of the cheapest TIE fighters you can get and literally just swarm.
Yeah, that makes sense. I've seen that work for a few people.
Yeah, and also just kind of fuel Star Wars-y as well, which is most reasons I play tabletop games is I'm not especially competitive. I enjoy story creation and kind of capturing that feeling of playing with action figures when you're a kid. So if I could make a game fuel Star Wars even, that's more important to me than winning, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so our Star Wars news. So we've had a couple of announcements about casting. One is an announcement. One's a strong rumor.
Okay.
So the first is an announcement, which is Dominic Monaghan, most notably for Lost and Lord of the Ring, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, is going to be cast in Episode 9, and he is being reunited with J.J. Abrams.
Oh, yes, because Jam Brahms worked on Lost.
Indeed. Yes, he did.
That's what TJ's done for, in case you didn't know.
Yes, Jam Brahms. have you seen, there's a meme at the moment.
Yes, exactly what you're going to say, and yes.
Have you seen the Ice Cube one?
No.
Icicle Cubicle.
Iceland
Cubicle.
The one I'd heard was someone overheard his son winding up his younger brother that Tolkien's real name was Jolkin Rolkin Rolkin Tolkien.
I want to play with Rolkan Tolkan robots. That's what I want to play with more than anything else now. Now I found this. Yeah. I think that's a good, you know, I think that's a good choice. He's a fine actor.
He's a very good actor. Yeah, that's I'm totally on board for that. If he wants to come and play in the galaxy far, far away, then that works for me. I'll be honest, there's very few actors I'd be disappointed to
see,
I think. But I'm pleased he's coming to play for this.
Yeah, I think, so which side do you think he falls, you know, which, where do you think he fits?
Well, he's British, isn't he?
That's it, isn't it? That's the trick.
Yeah, like Daisy Ridley.
Well, having said that, is he...
Or Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
Or Ewan McGregor.
Yeah, is he...
it's those British for bad guys.
Let's not make the same mistake again. Dominic Monaghan.
I was under the impression he was English, but I may be wrong.
Well, this is what I'm going to double check.
Yeah, please. Does he have a hyperdrive while you're looking?
He does not have a hyperdrive. He was born in West Germany. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Fair enough. British parents... So
neither of us could have called West Germany.
His parents are both British, and he spent most of his life in England. So he is British for, you know, beyond the location of the hospital. Of the hospital in which he was birthed into this world, he is British. So
I've enjoyed him in quite a few films and TV shows. And
likewise. In fact, actually, I played a video game where he did some voice work not that long ago. The video game Quantum Break? Developers of Max Payne?
It's an Xbox one, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah,
in fact, it is for Xbox One.
Xbox exclusive, so it's caught my eye. Yeah,
it's he plays the brother. So the main character is played by Iceman from the X-Men. The Fox X-Men movies. I forget his...
Is anyone else picture Val Kilmer just then?
Not that
just
one.
Me?
No. Not that one. He plays the main character, and then his brother is played by Dominic Monaghan. And they do a very good job in that. You can tell who plays the voice, who does the voice, because they are very, very much a perfect likeness of their real-life counterpart. It's very, very well done, that game, technologically. And actually, you know, I find it pretty fun to play too. So there's that. I'd be inclined to think he's a resistance guy. I don't think he strikes me as somebody who's going to slot more easily into a role, into a sort of a heroic role.
It's kind of intangible, but I do know what you mean.
Mm. There's something about him. I don't know what I can't put my finger on it, despite the Britishness. Because it does kind of make you more likely to be a villain, but completely definitively.
I think we need to have a proper tally on this.
Maybe we should. Maybe that's the trick. Maybe we need to go back through this. Maybe we should do it by trilogies.
Yeah.
Look at the originals, look at the prequels, and then look at the sequels and see what the ratios are.
Right, okay. Well, in Phantom Menace...
We're not doing it here, are we?
Why wouldn't we?
We can have a quick go, but I feel like we need to go back and do it properly.
Oh, all right. Yeah, because doing it properly is what we do.
I think if we want to keep the show under 4 hours, that's the trick, is to do that. But, you know.
Would be.
Well.
All right, guys, if you want to see us do that, holler us on the social media.
Yeah,
we'll get
us. Yes, no, if you want us to do the great British Tarkov.
All right, mate. So just for, without thinking too hard about it, just your initial impressions.
Yes.
When we do have this tally up of major characters,
we'll do major characters.
Roughly as a percentage, how many do you think would be British? I think it might be as high as 40.
You think 40% of the characters in general?
Across the whole saga.
The whole saga. I think 40 is a good number. I could be inclined to swing with that.
See how we go.
Now, as to the ratio of heroes versus villains, entire saga, I think it's going to be 60-40 villains. Maybe even higher, maybe 65-35.
Across the whole saga?
Yeah.
Yes, maybe.
65-35.
There'll be quite a few good guy British ones you kind of forget about.
Yes, that is true. That is probably the case. But we'll do that, like I say. I feel like it's something we need to do, because we don't just want to do like the main principal characters. We want anybody really with dialogue.
Well, we want a deep dive then, don't we?
We do. This is it. So it needs to be another...
We've got to do a movie and episode.
We could do that. That's one way of doing
10
it.
Episodes, you know.
It's one way of doing it. Yeah, it's one way of doing it.
Yeah,
yeah. All right. Well, we'll do that then. We'll go away and we'll have a look at the because that's just a research task, isn't it? For every episode, for the next 10 weeks, right. we'll have the
are we doing in universe chronological?
We'll do them. trying to think. Let's do production.
Release order.
Yeah. We'll do release order. Cool. Right, so yeah, that's going to be the Great
We don't turn up next week with different movies.
But it's going to be the Great British Wars Off.
Yeah. Okay, that works.
Yeah, and that's going to be on for roughly the same amount of time as the cooking show of a similar name.
Indeed. So next week
we'll start with A New Hope.
We'll come up with a number,
a raw number, a ratio.
Yeah.
And a numerical ratio and a percentage ratio, and then as we go along, we can do kind of we can make it cumulative, and we can, you know, you'll be all right, you'll be fine.
Just do my Brad Bass face.
That's fine. It looked like you had like a small dolphin just flying over your luscious locks. I wasn't really sure what was going on, but I'm kind of with it.
Yeah.
So there you go. Dominic Monaghan is the newest part. One of the newest parts of the Galaxy Far, Far Away, cast as he is in episode 9. Then, a few days later, Variety are reporting that Matt Smith, another British actor, is being cast in episode 9 for a key role. Their wording. Now, Matt Smith, obviously, most recently...
Most people know him as Skynet in...
I don't know. I feel like there's
outside of that.
I feel like there's something he's more famous for. Like he's more most recently, he's quite famous for The Crown, right?
That's the only big British TV series I'm aware of him doing. If I'm honest,
I can have a. I had a look through, and there was some sci-fi thing I didn't really care about, and the rest of it was
Wikipedia. See what I can find.
All right, cool. He's most notably known for, let's say, most recently for The Crown. His big high profile role recently. And doesn't he play? Oh, I forget who he plays in it. He's a king or something. He's some royal. He's royalty.
I'm just looking on Wikipedia now. Yes, he plays Skynet, stroke the T-5000 in Terminator Genesis.
Yep.
And he's Mr. Collins in Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which I still haven't seen somehow.
No, I'm
in the forthcoming Charlie Says he plays Charles Manson, which is a bit of a leap from.
Wow. Okay. That's an interesting dive.
Yeah. I mean, it might be just coincidentally, it's not actually the Charles Manson we're thinking of, but okay.
Yeah.
In Star Wars Episode 9, he's playing the character of Filming.
I like that part. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one here. I've got one listing here.
Got it. You said it was a British sci-fi series, yeah?
Yeah.
He played Jim Taylor in Ruby and the Smoke and the Shadow of the North, which are Philip Pullman books that have been adapted by the BBC.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. There is one here. It looks like they've just cut off the sentence before. That's weird. There's a listing here for a TV show, and it looks like they didn't finish describing it.
Yeah, the Sarah Jane something.
Yeah. Weird. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway. Anyway, he's being reportedly cast in a key role. Now, obviously, when they say key role, the rumour mill goes doolally.
Oh, he's going to be Barbara Jane.
It's gone from everything from I've seen young Snoke. It did make me think. I'd like to see him in a villainous role because I don't think I've ever seen him in anything so kind of clear cut. I mean, Skynet in Genesis is. He's not in it for long, though. That's the thing. He's in it for he's very, very brief, isn't he? And he actually is playing a human. He's masquerading as a human.
Yeah.
So I don't know if he's kind of very quick, blink and you'll miss it style.
Be honest and say I'm kind of fuzzing with Terminator stuff after the second movie anyway.
That's fair. I mean, those are the weakest ones afterwards. So, you know, there is that.
Salvation gets a harder time than it deserves.
I agree. I think it's a perfectly serviceable movie. Mm. The rumour mill is going nuts on this one, obviously, because like I say, it's an actor of some note and it's quote, a key role.
Yes.
So that could be anything from, you know,
Grand Admiral or Thrawn.
There you go. Yeah. So there's all sorts of possibilities. Obviously, I'm going to kind of keep this discussion on the speculative and the very much more general sense. So which side of the conflict do you see him coming down on?
You know, actually, although I agree with Dominic Monaghan, there's something kind of intangible that made you say Resistance, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
Matt Smith, I can see going to either quite happily.
I kind of hope he goes First Order. I'm hoping he has some key part to play. Somebody said...
Mandalorian.
Well, no, somebody was saying Knight of Ren. And that could kind of work for me. You know,
yeah, all right, whatever they may be, that's cool.
Exactly, yeah. I feel like they've got a lot of if they go with the Knights of Ren thing, they've got probably half a dozen parts they can cast very easily. You know, that they can get in the roles very easily, and they're not short of good British acting talent.
Yeah,
if they want to do the whole British faction thing, like
there's a lot of, you know, to be honest, there's quite a lot of British actors I think could step into playing a Knight of Ren, like. Chris Freckleston, I think, could do one really well. Peter Capaldi would be a really good Knight of Ren as well.
Are you mistaking it for something? I don't know. Anyway, I don't know. I mean, once she's finished with whatever she's doing, maybe Jodie Whittaker. I don't know. Yeah. Potentially.
She's up to it.
That's it. I think she's busy with something quite important. I forget.
Yeah.
I don't know. But one of the things that's one that kind of caught my eye that I thought, oh, I'd quite like that is him in sort of a prominent Knight of Ren in among the others.
Yeah.
Because he's got that, there's something about his look that I think that's what it is. I think it's that's the intangible quantity that you talk about. Mm-hmm. I think with Dominic Monaghan, it's that kind of, he can look very affable.
Yes.
Matt Smith could look very kind of skeevy with the right role.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with you.
I mean, it's entirely plausible that both of them could play neither, and they could end up playing some other faction, like a scum and villainy type role, or, you know, some kind of bands of the Rebel Alliance in Rogue One, where they're all kind of splintered and fragmented. And maybe Poe and Finn go on a recruitment sort of recruitment missions to try and convince some of the kind of smaller bands to group together and make another alliance. Yeah, or a thing, a hologram of Obi-Wan dying over and over again. The stuff we've run with for positively.
A living git. Yeah.
Yeah. So those are the two. So those are the two big ones. I did read something about...
I'm going to hand over all of the notes to you now because my phone's battery has just died, so I'm flying blind.
I can absolutely do that. That's not a problem.
Cool.
I did read one note in an article about a casting call that's still open, which is a female role, which is kind of...
You should go for it.
It's a female role. And I feel like... Fair enough. But it's kind of... The description is kind of vague. It's like a Charlize Theron-style Street Smarts character. It's kind of the description they went for. Sort of mid-20s person.
How old do you think Charlize Theron is?
I know she's not, but the sort of example they gave was a kind of, I think they used her as from a film and as an example of the kind of personality.
I'm with you. Okay.
Probably wasn't Fury Road.
Damn it.
But by contrast, it probably also wasn't A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Yeah.
Just because she's in it, you know.
Devil's Advocate, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's... Anyway, moving on. So we got a new poster for Star Wars Resistance.
We did.
With the season premiere and everything on it. There was a couple of things.
Front and center.
It does have a bit of that to it, doesn't it? There's a bit of an influence to it.
Even the Alien Force jacket is really quite similar, I think.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's grounds for a lawsuit, but it's got really looks quite a lot like Ben 10.
It might well be an influence, you know.
Yeah.
And they may be shooting for that kind of demographic that Ben 10 was going for too, you know.
Cool. Totally, yeah. I love Bit 10, so it's fine by me.
So one thing that caught my eye about it is that all the ships in the background are very different. And these squadron of ships are all kind of very distinct. And somebody, I think it's part, maybe it's in the behind-the-scenes video that's now on the Star Wars YouTube.
Right.
I think there's some conversation about how they're very much kind of into modifying their own, like, people who have kind of passion project cars in our world, people who sort of make, you know, they take the stock car and make modifications to make it faster and put a racing stripe down the side to make it go faster and things like that. There's that kind of fix it up. Yeah, fixing it up. And, yeah, exactly. So there's a, yeah, apparently like, there might be an element of that to it.
I like that. That's because the Republic is kind of ramshackle and kind of duct tape and spitting stuff together.
Especially as this is kind of following the resistance, the kind of the fledgling resistance. You could expect they would be just kind of scrounging what they can get.
I'm really on board with that as a concept, I think. If that's what it turns out to be, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and I think one thing that's kind of cool about this is this poster is very much, there's much better contrast in the colour scheme than the trailer I saw. Because the trailer I saw, I think I mentioned it at the time, looked very, very bloomy to washed me, out. Very very washed out and very pale.
I wonder if
really
that was intentional to kind of obscure some detail, maybe.
Entirely plausible, yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are people who deep dive frame by frame, but, you know, I only have so much prep time before every show, so it's not something I can screenshot together, sadly. But the link to the behind-the-scenes reel is on the show notes, so if people want to see that, they can feel free to check it out. It looks kind of cool to me. It's got some interviews with Dave Filoni and stuff, which is always nice.
To listen to, yeah.
Yeah, it's always worth having a listen. And it's, let's say, this poster gives me more kind of confidence that the actual show might turn out a bit visually more appealing to me, personally. Good. So that's good. You know, it's definitely a good poster. It's successful in that respect. And the last piece is Oscar Isaac was speaking to USA Today and gave a kind of sense of where the resistance is in episode 9.
Right.
And actually, there's not a lot there, but what is there is kind of interesting to me. So he kind of made, the word he uses is guerrillas. So he likened it to the Cuban Revolutionary War. And, you know, that kind of bands of small militia banding together against an empire, which in that case would be the states.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of episode 8, there's about 16 soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. So they would have troops, to band off, right? So that would make sense. And he was quoted as saying, "It's that kind of ragged at this point. You hear stories with George Washington as a general where lots of people died based on their orders, but that's part of leadership and that push and pull in the fight for figuring out what's the way to move forward." So there's a couple of things in there that kind of jumped out at me personally, just in terms of the themes we might see explored. That kind of tells me that Poe might still be struggling with the leadership mantle. You saw, obviously, at the end of episode 8, you saw him kind of step up a little bit. I think he might still be a bit conflicted about the kind of the realities of command.
Yeah. He's a squad leader, really, isn't he? He's not wanting to be admiral or anything.
This is it. He seems like he's going to become a kind of reluctant leader rather than, and that's, to be honest, I feel like that's the kind you want. You know, you want the one who's not, I'll take charge, because they're the ones I trust the least. Okay, I want the one who's like, oh, do I have to? I don't know why that is. Maybe I just have terrible choice in mentors, but it's, but the other thing that makes me wonder about this is this kind of thing suggests to me that we aren't going to see as big a time jump as we've been kind of speculating on. If they're still ragtag small groups doing kind of quick strikes and out.
I'm kind of walking back on that. I think they're going to go. I don't think it will be as straight in as 7 was into 8, but I think
6 months to a year, maybe.
I was just about to say, I think 6 months at the most.
Yeah.
But I think it's a shame in a way, but I think it was also important to kind of keep that momentum up as well. So I can see upsides and downsides of both.
Mm-hmm.
But by virtue of 8, of the beginning of 8 kind of establishing that's what's going to happen, it almost feels like there's a momentum to be kept up, and 9 is going to pick up probably not instantly after, but I think relatively soon after compared to the others. Because, I mean, apart from apart from Force Awakens into Last Jedi, the shortest jump is Empire to Jedi, which is 18.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I suppose if you count Rogue One to New Hope, it would be, you know, a few hours, I guess. Hang on, I'm having problems here. So that's the last piece of Star Wars news for this week. We seem to be having some technical difficulties, but they couldn't have, if they were going to happen, they've come at the best possible time, because we are through our notes. So, you know, all that remains is to sign off. So that's worked out quite well.
Mm.
Yeah. So Thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars, episode 134. If you've enjoyed the show and this is your first time listening, feel free to subscribe on all good podcast catchers and go back through and have a listen to our wonderful, wonderful back catalogue. If you've enjoyed the show and you wish to support us, we are on the Patreon, patreon.com/talkstarwars. You can give as little as $1 a month to get an ad-free version of the show, which will appear in your podcast catchers, all being well, a couple of days before general release. So it's something I like to do where possible. You also get kind of little bits of behind-the-scenes stuff. I tend to just chuck random questions in there, polls, all sorts of stuff. So if you want to get involved in that, it's 25 cents a week or 20 cents a week in some months. And you get all that stuff just for you, you know, as a way of saying thanks. Brad, where can people find you in between shows?
You can find me on facebook.com/BradHarmerBarnes. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram @RealBradHB. I'm on Discord, but I don't really understand it, so don't expect too much out of me there.
Fair.
And you can buy my books through Amazon.
Yes, you can indeed. And the widget to do so and the URL to do so are in the show notes and on talkstarwars.co.uk, where you can do that. You find me on Twitter and Instagram @RobWadeVision. I also run the Talk Star Wars Twitter and Instagram accounts, although the Instagram is basically just me whenever I have anything Star Wars that was also on my other account. TalkStarWars.co.uk is where you can find the website where all this wonderful stuff happens. There's a Facebook page, Talk Star Wars. And you can also, I have a small book. You can buy it from Amazon. It's called Assorted Thoughts on Podcasting, and it's available on Amazon. And there is a link to that in the show notes, too. One quick shout out, as always. Thank you to Adam Sheldon of the Retro Ink Podcast for the Talk Star Wars intro and outro theme. I think you'll agree it's a cracker. And I would be remiss if I went a show without mentioning the other wonderful podcasts in the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. So that's the Tumbling Saber Podcast, Generation X-Wing, Rogue Squadron Podcast, the Skyhoppers Podcast, Nerd Room, the San Diego Sabres Radio Podcast, Tatooine Suns Podcast, Less Than 12 Parsecs, and the Retro Ink Podcast, the newly minted members.
The Archers isn't actually on the network, it's just on my feed.
The Archers is not on the network, no, that is just your feed particular. if you want to submit questions for and comments for the show, then podcast@talkstarwars.co.uk is the place to do so. And if you enjoy me and Brad talking in a loose, kind of vaguely freeform conversational way, then you would be well served by checking out.
Hang out, I guess.
Yeah, you would be well served by checking out Emotionally 14, where we both participate in podcasts on a, you know, slightly less regular basis.
Yeah, we do.
They are so much fun to do, and I'm sure that you will find some fun if you go searching. So emotionally14.com and at emotionally14 on Twitter. Find us everywhere. We're on social media in so many places. You know, just say hi somewhere. We love it. But for now, thank you very much for listening to Talk Star Wars. We will see you next week, and may the Force be with you.